Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, August 2nd, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The U.S. Forest Service is asking people to be careful with campfires as hot, dry weather blankets the Tongass National Forest this summer. Seth Ross, acting fire management officer on the Tongass, says fire danger has been high for central and southern parts of the forest.
Down in the Cake area, it's been very dry down there, and some of the fire danger ratings, we use that term, are very high at this point in clear-cut fuel models. We measure a few different types of fuel models out there, and the one that reflects the clear-cut activity is showing very high, and then across the boards on the south end of the forest especially are showing a very high and a high fire danger.
Ross says it's a different story on the northern end of the forest, where fire danger has been moderate. However, he expects this week's sunny skies should put the entire forest at high fire danger levels. So far, about 15 fires have been reported on the Tongass this year, including 5 or 6 this week. Typically, the Tongass totals about 20 to 25 fires a year during the warmer, drier months. Ross says 2 fires were active on Wednesday, one near Sitka, another south of Cake.
The one down by Cake may be a little bit bigger than we usually experience here. It may have been kind of there, and the hot weather has gotten it, and it usually digs down pretty deep, and sometimes it doesn't look as large as it is when you get there. But that one may be a little bit larger than usual, and usually we're less than a quarter of an acre for our fires here, but that one may be pushing, you know, just about that threshold.
As of Wednesday, the forest had not implemented any restrictions for people camping in the forest or companies logging and doing other work. That could change with restrictions for industrial work possible if the dry weather persists.
I'm mostly advising people to, you know, please enjoy the beautiful woods that we have. But, you know, if they are going to have campfires, just to please be careful with that and just be careful with fire in general, you know, until we see the weather change, which I understand maybe this weekend.
Campers are asked not to leave fires unattended and should extinguish coals completely. Yesterday during this newscast, you heard a report from Juno about a massive project involving 40 scientists from 11 different agencies. They're all studying the Gulf of Alaska. The goal is to better understand the relationships between different species of fish and the natural world around them. Today, KCAW's Ed Ronco reports on how that method of research signals a shift in the way we understand science.
If you're talking to one of the scientists working on this project, they're probably going to call it by its initials, which are pronounced GOAERP.
Which is a clumsy acronym, stands for Gulf of Alaska Integrated Ecosystem Research Program.
Olav Ormseth is a scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. He's standing aboard the Sea View, a Juno-based fishing boat chartered for research cruises.
And so the whole idea is that instead of having individual scientists going out and, you know, doing their own projects, and then maybe at some point in the future trying to sort of figure out how things come together, the idea with this is that basically you bring everybody together and try to coordinate things from the get-go.
The team Ormseth works with is doing near-shore studies. They happen to be looking at inlets and bays around Sitka this week, but the project itself runs throughout the Gulf of Alaska. They're especially focused on the early stages of life for 5 species of fish.
You know, if we can get a better idea of what different factors affect their survival during their first year of life here in the inshore, then that's ultimately going to end up providing better information. You get a better model, and you can do a better job of managing the fisheries.
So remember now the title of the project. It's the Gulf of Alaska Integrated Ecosystem Research Program, and it's the word integrated that we want to focus on. It means scientists are looking at the bigger picture instead of focusing on just one species or one location or one time period.
It's definitely not a brand new idea, but I would say there's definitely been increasing emphasis on it and sort of increasing awareness of the fact that it's important.
Why?
Well, part of it is probably just evolution. You know, like as science progresses and there's just more knowledge is accumulated, things just sort of tend to get better because there's more information.
It's also easier than ever for scientists to communicate with each other and compare and contrast their experiences. So Ormseth says that by using that communication and using the same methods to do research throughout the Gulf, This project will help paint a bigger picture than has ever been painted about what's going on off the shores of Alaska. And that, says Wyatt Fournier, could change everything about the way we manage fish.
Our goal is to eventually be able to have an ecosystem-based management. It's something that science and marine science has been pushing for a long time, but it's extremely difficult because of the resources required, because of the vast area that is the Pacific Ocean and the Bering Sea, and because of the diversity and abundance of fish that we have out here and all the interactions that take place.
Fournier's role in the project is to organize logistics and research cruises. He says they're trying to build a foundation on which future scientists can better understand how to manage fisheries. Doing so could help maintain one of the world's most wild and sustainable sources of food. Fournier says it could also help people avoid repeating some of history's mistakes.
If you look at the way we fished the Atlantic Ocean, and we fished it pretty hard from the Europe side and the North American side, and you think about the Atlantic Ocean as actually a younger ocean than the Pacific Ocean, we really have a chance to really manage and observe the Pacific Ocean in such a way that we don't have fishery crashes.
Exactly what impact the project will have remains to be seen. It started in 2010, and it has a budget of around $17.6 million, mostly from the North Pacific Research Board. Scientists did a lot of field research in 2011, and they're doing more this year to note the changes. The project continues through 2014, but understanding what it all means could take longer. Back aboard the Seaview, tied up in Sitka, Olav Ormseth says interpreting the data will be a long process.
And I think, like, I kind of joke that, like, I'm going to be able to get half my career out of this project, you know. And it's the reason I say that is that I think it's going to be years of, you know, everyone will be moving on to actively doing other research projects, but I think it's going to be a long time before we sort of have everything wrapped up. And
science, he says, generates many more questions than answers. But exploring those questions builds understanding. And Ormseth says the more understanding we have, the better decisions we make. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A bald eagle that was rescued from a beach in Petersburg last month was euthanized at the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka earlier this week. The eagle had been at the Raptor Center for about 5 weeks, recovering from an injury to the tip of its wing. The eagle was rescued last month by a Petersburg visitor and local officials, and it arrived at the center with a broken alula bone in its wing, making it unable to fly. Staff performed surgery on the bird and gave it antibiotics for about 10 days before moving it to the center's larger flight area. However, after spending a few weeks there, staff began to realize that something more serious was wrong. Jennifer Cedarleaf is the avian rehabilitation coordinator there.
We kind of suspected that he might have been an electrocution, and it takes about 3 to 4 weeks to really see the full results of an electrocution, and that's pretty much it. He was in there 5 weeks, and then they were cleaning in there and noticed part of a wing with bone on it laying on the ground, and we figured it was probably from him, and so we picked him up, and the bone in his wing had started to die from the electrocution, and the very end part of the wing had just broken off.
Cedarleaf added that electrocutions can almost cook a wing, or a talon can get almost cooked if a bird is exposed for too long. In southeast Alaska, electrocutions are relatively common due to dense eagle populations close to power lines and coastal areas like Petersburg.
We see quite a few. Most of them are birds that we pick up as DOAs. They hit the line and get electrocuted so badly that they just die instantly. And then we see other ones. We've seen it in, boy, pretty much every species of bird that we deal with, I think we've seen an electrocution in.
In the past, Petersburg has spent money to eagle-proof their power lines to prevent electrocutions. Cedarleaf says that the eagle from Petersburg will be sent to the National Eagle Repository in Colorado for conservation and use in Native American traditions. Ground has been broken at the site of the planned Walter Sobolev Center in downtown Juneau. Yesterday's ceremony included speeches, dancing, and praise for Sobolev, the Tlingit spiritual leader who died in 2011 at the age 102. First Lady Sandy Parnell read a speech prepared for the governor, who stood beside her but had laryngitis. She recalled the kindness of Sobolev had shown them and said the center would be the heartbeat of the community and serve as a bridge between cultures. The center's features are expected to include art demonstration, exhibit and performance space, a research facility, library, and collection storage. Public and private funds have been raised for the $20 million project. The Alaska Heritage Institute still must raise about $4 million. The target is to complete construction by December 2014. Republican Bill Walker is planning to run as an unaffiliated candidate for governor next year. If he qualifies, Walker would avoid a primary with Governor Sean Parnell and get his name on the November general election ballot. Walker, in a statement, said it seems to him that if you don't support the oil tax cut the legislature recently passed, you're not considered a good Republican. He said that while he'll remain a traditional Alaska Republican, it's time to put party politics aside. Walker is former mayor of Valdez, known for his support of an all-Alaska natural gas pipeline. He finished behind Parnell in the 2010 GOP primary and at times complained that Parnell didn't participate in more debates. The House majority has announced the members of a new task force charged with studying education funding in Alaska. The panel is expected to make recommendations to the House in January. House Resolution 8, which created the task force, called for five public members on the panel, two educators, two business persons, and someone representing the Alaska Federation of Natives or an Alaska Native Regional Corporation. It also called for a co-chair of the House Energy Committee. Today it's going to be mostly cloudy, then becoming mostly sunny in the afternoon. Areas of fog in the morning, highs 63 to 69.